Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up tomorrow. David Brooks on his new book, The Social Animal. David Brooks and more tomorrow here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Right now we take as self-evident that if given the chance, people will opt for freedom and democracy. But are we democratic by nature? In the Middle East right now, we're watching a democracy movement that may or may not result in actual democracies. They're wading into a complicated battle between all kinds of political, tribal, and religious factions, and the world is watching to see how it all shakes out and how far the Western world will go toward pushing for democracy there. Joining me now is the author of a serendipitously timed new book called The Tribal Imagination, Civilization and the Savage Mind, about humans' tribal nature and how it continues to shape the complex civilized world that we live in. He is Robin Fox, anthropologist and professor of social theory at Rutgers. Welcome to WNYC, Professor Fox.
Hello. Nice to be here.
What evidence of our tribal roots do you see here in this country versus, say, in Libya?
Well, in Libya it's more obvious because there are real tribes, you know, with names and organizations, and that's who are fighting each other right now. Here, we tend to think we've shed tribalism, you know, we've left the savage behind. But many of the things, and what we have tried to do is take many of the things that were high moral virtues in the tribes, like helping kinsmen before all others, you know, which we now call nepotism, or corruption, which is trying to smooth the way of everything with gifts, which we now call bribery. And cronyism, you know, which is appointing your friends to positions over and above those qualified for it. But as all of us who know follow our own state politics, we haven't shed these at all. They're still very, very much part with it. I mean, I live in New Jersey, and I regularly see the perp walk, you know, of local politicians who've handed out the goods to their relatives and friends.
So you think that kind of corruption stems from a tribal impulse rather than that somebody was willing to give them a bribe?
Well, that is a tribal impulse. Tribes operate on a kinship basis, on a group basis. This is why when we say we're going to impose democracy on these tribal countries, we have to think what their concept of freedom is. Mm. In Libya, for example, in Iraq, the freedom is the freedom of the tribe to be free, the freedom of your kin group to be free, not necessarily the freedom of the individual. People think through tribes. They think through tribal spectacles. What happens in the cities over there is that people get relatively detribalized. The large mobs and the people demanding whatever, including what they say is democracy, out in the streets are these semi-detribalized urban youths, mostly. The tribes, meantime, are sitting out there in the country and playing their own game. They don't necessarily agree. This is what's happening in Iran, for example, that we don't see. The so-called pro-democracy movements are coming from the urban, largely from the urban educated youth. But out in the countryside, the tribes are still pretty damn conservative and abiding their time.
Is that a kind of tribe, in your telling of it, urban, educated youth who might be seen as less tribal in another telling?
Well, the opinion varies on this. They, on the one hand, get to some extent detribalized because of the very fact of living in the city, but they all maintain extremely strong allegiances to their clan, their branch of the tribe. They're more likely to see the degrees they get as bringing honor to their clan than they are as bringing honor to themselves as individuals. I think this is the thing we find hard to understand, is that people think much, much more in group terms. I call it the mafia solution, you know. You never go against the family. The family is everything. The extreme attraction of the Godfather movie series for us, for example, I think derives a lot from that. That we in our hearts somewhere, we'd really like to belong to the Corleone family. It's extremely protective. It's very safe. We can depend on it when anything goes wrong. And very often, in most societies where you can't trust the state, Now, where the state is, in fact, maybe even antagonistic to you, you fall back on Cosa Nostra. You fall back on the idea that your family, your lineage, your clan is your only protection.
And from the existential to the ridiculous, perhaps, in our society, do we redefine tribe as the interest group to some degree? I'm thinking of, for example, the fight right now here in New York over bike lanes. Would you say that in a city like New York, a borough like Brooklyn, our tribal roots come out in the form of the bicycle tribe versus the car driving tribe versus the pedestrian tribe?
Oh, no, absolutely no question. The fact is that we don't necessarily live in things that are named tribes anymore, but we recreate them for ourselves. I mean, the most startling example are the sports fans, football fans, of which I must say I am one. And one of the nice things about being a football fan is that, you know, a rational and supposedly scientific academic can literally let his hair down, paint his face, and behave like a Zulu, you know, chanting and singing and having mass emotions. And this is a relatively benign form of tribalism. That's okay. But otherwise, yes, we form ourselves into groups in which we want to lose our identity. And this can be either benign, like fan groups for pop idols, or it can be serious and difficult, like the Ku Klux Klan or armed gangs.
By the way, as a New Jersey,
in all these cases, we're trying to get back into the tribal state.
Robin Fox, author of The Tribal Imagination, Civilization and the Savage Mind. As a New Jersey football fan, did you mean Jets, Giants, or soccer?
I meant Rutgers.
Oh, Rutgers. I should have known.
Yes, dear old Rutgers, in through thick or thin. Yeah.
And the guy stepped out of bounds, and they should have replayed. Never mind. Listeners,
absolutely.
What
absolutely.
Urban tribe do you most identify with? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or what any kind of tribe do you most identify with? You hear how broadly our guest is framing this. Where do you start? Where do you get your tribal identity in today's modern world in the New York metropolitan area or wherever you happen to be listening? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Back to the Middle East, Professor. Here's a clip of Demos fellow and Libya expert Benjamin Barber on this show talking about Libya's tribal society.
We tend to look at Libya from afar as a singular nation state, but the reality is it is also a tribal state, it is also a clan state, and the initial uprising, the impetus for it, came from clans in Benghazi who were, yes, interested in liberty and freedom, but also interested in overthrowing the clan rival who had been in control in Tripoli in the West for these last 42 years.
And this gets back to what you were talking about before, I think,
Absolutely.
Because we see people talk about the tribal society in Libya in contrast to a democratic one. So if this uprising is primarily about clan rivalry, is democracy possible?
Well, some sort of democracy is possible. I think, you know, what the mistake we make is to assume that our own particular form of individualistic Western liberal democracy is possible. There has always been, and Ben Barber is absolutely right, I mean, there's always been in these societies a democracy of the tribes. As I say, they more or less stood in balanced opposition to one another with some sort of accommodation, some sort of standoff, intermittent raiding and the like. And they've always been opposed to whatever form the state takes, and which usually takes the form of one tribe getting some kind of dominance and ruling from the towns. What has happened with the modern dictators is that the Gaddafi tribe, for example, has got modern weaponry and oil money and so on, so that it can impose a much more effective state on the tribes of Libya than has ever been possible in the past. When you only had scimitars and camels, you know, it was very difficult to keep the tribes under control. And the tribes seethe under this restriction. But if we want to go in there and assume that we take ballot boxes and purple finger paint, you know, and turn these people into Westchester voters, it simply doesn't work that way. I think that would be fatal. I think there's a complete failure of understanding, as there was in Iraq, as there is now in Afghanistan, of the very tribal nature of the people that we're dealing with and what they see as freedom.
So
can I repeat something from, did you remember the film Lawrence of Arabia?
Uh-huh.
Auda, played by Anthony Quinn, you know, is the tribal chief, and Lawrence and the English are trying to get him to come onto their side to attack the Turks. And he will do it for money, he says, out of the tribal chief. But they appeal to his patriotism. They say, well, why, you must do it for the Arab people. And he's utterly scornful. He says, who are these Arab people? I don't know. What tribe is that? He said, you know, he names all the tribes he knows. Even the English to him are a tribe he can use against the Turks or another tribe. But who are the Arab people? They're not a tribe. Why should he do anything for them? And I think, you know, that little scene goes right to the heart of this.
Let's see what tribe some of our listeners feel they belong to. Francis in Belmore, you're on WNYC. Hi, Francis.
Hello there. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. You must get an awful lot from the beleaguered middle class.
Is that your tribe?
That's my tribe. That and also I'm in the educational field. I'm a specialist working in the public schools and in private practice.
The beleaguered middle class and the very beleaguered teacher class.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're getting squeezed from both ends. You know, I know that I've worked in this field for 24 years. I put myself through college, graduate, and undergraduate, paid all my bills, paid my pension. My pension's never been correctly funded. It's been borrowed against and everything else.
But let's not get too far down that road for this discussion. But I hear you about the tribes. Thank you, Francis. Monica in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Monica.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
I'm very well.
What's your tribe?
I'm a member of the Jewish tribe.
And why do you put it that way?
I put it that way because that's what it is for me. I'm not particularly actually religious, but there's a myriad of positions that the Jewish people take, and there's no one. There's obviously, you know, branches of Judaism, but...
But that's where you most find your core identity is in your Jewishness.
Exactly.
Monica, thank you. And it's... Whoops, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Monica. Finish that thought.
In its tribal sense, not so much a religious sense, mm-hmm. And that's why I think this conversation is really interesting.
Peoplehood. Thank you very much. Paul in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Good to be here.
What's your tribe?
My tribe is veterans, military veterans. I'm a veteran myself, and I work with veterans a lot in my occupation, and when I'm talking with them, dealing with them, I find a lot of commonalities, even among veterans from different branches of service.
Thank you very much, Anne, and thank you for your service. Anne in Locust Valley, what's your tribe?
The public radio tribe.
You're very sweet.
No, I can talk to friends all over the country, and we all are on the same wavelength, and we know similar stories, and it's funny how it's, you know, we have these simultaneous thoughts, and it's based on what we've heard on the radio, on public radio.
Thank you very much. So, Robin Fox, isn't it interesting? We took four calls. We got one occupation group, a class tribe, class-based tribe. We got veterans. I guess that's an occupation, too, maybe a special occupation. We got a media use tribe, and we got a religious tribe. So it shows how diverse the notion can be interpreted as being. Did we lose Robin Fox?
Belong to, and we feel are not strangers to us, you know. One of the great shifts in social evolution that anthropologists, sociologists look at is the shift from societies primarily which consisted of groups of kin who knew each other and did not trust anyone outside their kin group. Never go outside the family. Never trust. Never go against the family. The mafia, you remember, in The Godfather again. To a society where we had to trust people outside the family, where we had to go outside the kin group, where we had to go outside the tribe, and we had to deal with total strangers. We give strangers lots of our money. You know, we call it taxation. But essentially, it's giving money to strangers to give to other strangers. This is very strange to the tribal mind.
Yeah.
you try telling that to a tribesman in somewhere in Libya, you know, that he should give his money to some strangers so that they can distribute it to other strangers. He would think you were simply insane.
Now, speaking of...
But we do it as a matter of course, you know.
Well, do you
but
think
we still
then,
want to feel we belong to the tribe.
Do you think, sorry, then, that democratic institutions are actually not the product of our freedom-loving human nature, but rather the result of hard work to overcome human nature?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think our democratic institutions sit on a narrow edge, and we see they're always being assaulted by the enemies we keep citing, by the corruption, by the nepotism, by the cronyism. by the attempt of people to foster their own interests once they get power in the democratic system. What we do in democratic systems is just amazing to people of the tribal mentality, that we put up different candidates, we count heads, and then the one who gets the most votes gets in power and can do pretty much anything he pleases. This is extraordinary. The Arabs have a wonderful proverb which says, from the palace to the grave. Once you've got the palace, you don't give it up until death. To do so would be to give it over to the scoundrels and your enemies. You hear all the dictators when they're going down in the Middle East talk about their enemies, their enemies all the time.
I agree. It's one
doing
of,
it now. Yeah.
It's one of the most remarkable things about our society, our political culture.
That's right. Even after
Bush versus Gore. Gore stood up there
and
said...
Well, even in that case where the person who got less votes, actually, took over and did as he pleased.
But that's another
show. An extraordinary thing to be doing. It certainly doesn't stem from anything in human nature. And it's really antithetical to most of our feelings of human... I mean, listen to the rhetoric at elections. If we let the other side in, I mean, they're scoundrels, they will ruin us.
Right.
It's almost criminal to allow them to take office, right?
And then we
do. We
got to go in a minute.
That's the most amazing change, and that change has not been made in many of these places and won't be in a hurry.
We got to go in a minute and talk about two other competing tribes in our area, the landlord tribe and the tenant tribe, as the Village Voice, known for fingering the 10 worst landlords year after year, fingers New York City's 10 worst tenants in its new issue. We're going to do that in a minute. But last question for you. You write about Seinfeld as an illustration of our human instinct to make rules. Each episode was essentially about the complex rules for dumping a girlfriend, for breaking a date, for makeup sex, as they once called it, for what counts as garbage, for regifting, and on and on. Is it true that the more complex the rules, the more evolutionarily evolved we are? Is there a historical timeline on that?
Well, we're the only animal that makes rules. I mean, you know, we live by rules. We don't live by instincts. And so this capacity to make rules and to memorize them and to operate in terms of them is very profound. I was just using Seinfeld as an example. This was a generation that figured it didn't have to live by any rules anymore. Mm-hmm. And yet Larry David and Seinfeld, every episode, is obsessively concerned with what the rules are for behavior. They have to remake their own from somewhere. And everybody, a lot of thinkers from Thomas Jefferson onwards have said, you know, that we basically are a rule-making animal. Yes, that this is fundamentally in our nature. We don't just act on impulse. We act according to rules. We'll turn anything into a game with rules. I used to sing Barbershop, and I enjoyed singing Barbershop, but I left it in the end because we were entirely concerned with the rules of competitions. And this came to dominate everything we were doing. And, you know, from the regionals to the state to the nationals to the internationals and so on.
Yeah, what fun.
Everything we make into an elaborate game with rules. And a reflection of our nature.
What fun is singing if you can't defeat somebody in the process? Okay,
we
will leave it there. With Robin Fox, Rutgers professor and author now of The Tribal Imagination, Civilization and the Savage Mind. Great conversation. Thank you.
You too. Thanks a lot. Bye.
And coming up next, yes, indeed, the Village Voice, known for its 10 worst landlords list, fingers New York City's 10 worst tenants. And landlords, the phones are yours now. We will take your worst tenant stories. Landlords, your worst tenant stories. 212-433-WNYC. Nominate somebody for the next 10 worst tenants list. 212-433-9692.